Welcome to the deep dive. We're jumping straight in today. We're focusing on smart test-taking strategies specifically for the California Supplemental Examination, the CSE.
Yeah, think of this as a way to approach the exam more, well, strategically. Boost your confidence, learn how to really navigate the questions themselves.
Exactly. We want to help you study smarter, not just harder. Our goal here is really to equip you with some practical techniques.
Right. We know you want to get this knowledge efficiently, feel prepared, you know, not completely overwhelmed.
Okay, so just quickly, the CSE covers five main areas, right? And they have different weights. Contract development and project planning, that's 25%. Schematic design and discretionary approvals is the big run at 30%. Then design development at 15%.
All right.
Construction docs and permitting is smaller, 10%. And project bidding and construction is 20%. So knowing that kind of helps you see where the focus is.
It does give you a sense of priority. But for this discussion, we're really zeroing in on mastering those multiple choice questions.
Yeah, the nuts and bolts of answering.
Exactly. We want to give you strategies to, you know, confidently kick out the wrong answers, spot those tricky distractors, and really nail down the best answer.
So what are the core skills here?
Well, it really boils down to three things. Reading the question carefully, like really carefully, then identifying the keywords, and finally applying solid reasoning.
Okay, sounds good. Let's get tactical then. Strategy number one.
Eliminating wrong answers. This is often your best first move.
Just get rid of the obvious junk.
Pretty much. Scan the choices, cross out anything that just screams incorrect.
Are there telltale signs? Red flags?
Definitely. First big one. Any answer that suggests breaking a code or a law. Just no. Get rid of it immediately.
Makes sense. What else?
Second, watch out for answers that describe tasks way outside an architect's legal scope. Especially if the question is asking what an architect should do.
Like telling the contractor exactly how to pour concrete.
Sort of, yeah. Things like directly instructing means and methods when it's not appropriate that could be a red flag depending on the context.
And wow, just doing that can really help, can it?
Oh, absolutely. You knock out one or two bad options and suddenly your odds are way better. Sometimes you get it down to a 50-50 shot.
Okay, that's powerful. So moving on, strategy two, spotting trick wording and distractors.
Right, and it's important to remember, the CSE isn't trying to trick you maliciously. It's testing if you can read carefully and think through real situations.
So it's about precision, not deception.
Spot on. It often comes down to single words. Things like most or first or required. Those can totally change what the right answer is.
So rule one is read carefully, maybe even twice.
Definitely read it twice if you need to. It pays off. Now, about those distractors.
The answers that look right but aren't.
Exactly. There are common types, like a statement that's true factually but just doesn't answer the specific question being asked.
Okay, like a random true fact thrown in.
Precisely. Or you might see a generally true statement, a principle that holds water usually, but it just doesn't apply to the specific scenario in this question.
Gotcha. Context is key.
Absolutely. Another tricky one is an answer that seems plausible, but misses a really critical detail or condition that was mentioned right there in the question.
Like maybe the question specifies pre-design and the answer talks about construction admin.
Exactly like that. Or maybe it suggests doing things in the wrong order.
Oh yeah, like submitting something before you've fixed a known code issue.
Right, that's a classic. So the tactic here is identify the critical conditions in the question stem. Like underline them mentally, then make sure your chosen answer actually meets all of them.
A tip.
And these distractors, they often have tiny flaws, you know.
Huh.
A slightly wrong term, an unnecessary step someone careful wouldn't take. Slow down, read word by word, analyze it.
Okay, that deliberate pace sounds important. Which brings us nicely to strategy three, using logic. This is after we've weeded out the bad ones and squinted at the tricky ones.
Exactly. Now you apply your reasoning to what's left.
So how do we do that systematically?
First step, believe it or not, reread the question again.
Okay, another read through. Focusing on.
Keywords. What's the core issue? What are the constraints? Then look hard at the answers still on the table. Which one addresses all parts of the question?
Not just a piece of it.
Right, the whole thing. You're looking for the most complete, most direct answer to what was actually asked.
And if you're still stuck between, say, two plausible options?
That's where you lean on the big principles. Health, safety, and welfare. HSW.
The foundation.
Always. Ask yourself, which of these remaining choices leads to the safest outcome? The most code compliant? The most responsible thing for the client and the public? 9 times out of 10, that's your answer.
Because the test is ultimately about being a competent ethical architect.
That's the core of it. So when in doubt, rely on that professional judgment. What would a competent, conscientious architect actually do?
Okay, this is making sense, but let's see it in action. Can we walk through an example?
Let's do it. Example one. Picture this. Construction is done on a new bank card facility. The contractor hands the client as built drawings. Mm-hmm. Then the client asks you, the architect, to create record drawings based on those as builts. Big catch. This wasn't in your original contract.
Scope creep after the fact. So what should the architect do? Options are A, tell the contractor to do it. B, say no because of liability. C, ask the client for written authorization for additional services first. D, just start doing it on a time and materials basis.
Okay, keywords first. We've got contractor, client, architect, and that crucial phrase, not part of the original contract.
Right, and after construction is complete, as-built drawings. This smells like contract admin, maybe project bidding and construction phase issues.
Good connection. So let's eliminate. Option A, instruct the contractor. Does the architect usually tell the contractor to do extra work requested by the client after the job is done, especially if it wasn't in anyone's contract?
Probably not. The architect's authority over the contractor usually relates to their contract work, so A seems weak.
Agreed. Option B, decline due to liability. Is that the only or best option? Declining outright might damage the client relationship. Plus, can't liability be managed?
Yeah, maybe too absolute. You could potentially do it with the right agreement in place, so B feels a bit off too.
Okay, down to C and DC.
Yeah.
Is get written authorization first. D is just start working on T&M logic time.
Right. Option C feels proper. Standard practice. Get it in writing if it's extra work. It clarifies scope, fees, everything. Protects everyone.
And option D, just starting work on T&M.
That feels risky. What if the client disputes the hours later or claims they never really authorized it? It skips that formal agreement step.
Exactly. It opens the door to problems. So, applying logic, considering standard contracts and professional conduct.
C looks like the clear winner. Request written authorization before you lift a finger.
Spot on. It's contractually sound, professional, manages risk. Okay, ready for another one.
Let's do it. Question two. Designing a building in a high-risk wildfire zone, heavily wooded, what strategy best mitigates wildfire destruction to the building?
Okay, options. A, hose bibs around the building plus defensible space. B, non-combustible exterior finishes on all surfaces plus defensible space of at least 30 feet. C, submit a fire access plan to the fire department before construction. D, non-combustible finishes just on the side facing the wind, plus ensure fire truck access.
Keywords here, strategies, wildfire destruction, and critically, best mitigate. We want the most effective protection for the building itself.
Right. Let's weed some out. Option A, hose bibs. Defensible space is good, yes, but hose bibs, that requires someone to be there using them. It's reactive, not passive protection for the building structure itself. Maybe not the best core strategy.
Seems secondary. Okay, option C, submit a fire access plan. Important, yes, for firefighters to get there. But does the plan itself stop embers from igniting the siding?
Not directly, no. It's procedural, helps the response effort. But it doesn't make the building itself more fire resistant.
Yeah.
So C is probably not the best mitigation for the building structure.
Okay, down to B and D again. Both mention non-combustible finishes. B says all surfaces plus 30 feet defensible space. D says finishes just on the windward side plus fire access.
Logic time. What are the main wildfire threats to a building?
Embers landing on flammable stuff and intense heat radiating from nearby burning vegetation or structures.
Exactly. So non-combustible finishes directly counter the ember threat on the building surfaces. Defensible space counters the radiant heat threat by keeping fuel away. Option B addresses both, comprehensively all surfaces, and a specified defensible zone.
And option D?
Well, it only protects one side with non-combustible materials. Wildfires can swirl, embers fly everywhere. Protecting only the windward side isn't full protection.
Mm-hmm.
And while fire access is good, again, it's about response, not inherent building resistance.
So B covers the bases more thoroughly, non-combustible shell and the buffer zone.
Precisely. It combines the passive protection of materials with the site planning defense of defensible space.
Mm.
It's a much more robust, holistic strategy against the direct threats.
Makes sense. So the best answer is B.
Correct. Use non-combustible exterior finishes for all building surfaces and maintain that defensible space.
Okay, so just to wrap this part up, we've looked at how to break down these CSE questions. It's about systematically getting rid of wrong answers.
Spotting those distractors, the tricky wording.
And then using logic, careful reading, keywords, and that HSW filter to find the best fit.
Yeah, and it really comes back to remembering what the CSE is testing. Your competence and your professional judgment as an architect in California.
It's not just about spitting back facts. It's about demonstrating reasoned decision-making.
Absolutely. So, as you continue studying, try to actively use these strategies. Don't just read questions. Analyze them this way.
Think about how you can weave this approach into your practice sessions. How can these tools boost not just your knowledge, but your confidence in tackling the exam itself?
Good final thought. And definitely keep the CSE test plan and candidate handbook handy. They're your primary guides.
Great advice. Thanks for diving into these strategies with us today.